Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie is a simple email. The programme is the Rotunda. It's the third series. It's a fly-in-the-wall documentary and it proved very popular. But last night's edition on RT television didn't prove popular with some of our listeners at least, and they want to tell us why. Nadine Weldon, Nadine, you contact us. Why were you unhappy?
Because when I was in the hospital, my son, I was not allowed to see him for 24 hours after he was born. And after that, I was only allowed to see him for 15 minutes. And my father was only allowed to see him after a week for 15 minutes. And they had camera crew allowed in the hospital.
Camera crew, yeah.
Yeah.
So your objection is what, Nadine? That the cameras could get in, but your husband couldn't or your partner couldn't?
My partner couldn't, yeah. And thousands more people couldn't. He had to go through misery by themselves in such a lonely time that should have been happy. He weren't. The hospital took it away from them.
They say the camera crews were tested on a regular basis.
But partners could have been. They never got offered that.
Partners,
and I'm sure partners would have been happy to be offered that.
And you have the statement, neither the Rotunda, who are normally very good on PR, they're very anxious to come on when it's a good news story, but they're not willing to come, and likewise RTE. But you have the statement from the Rotunda. Have you got that in front of you, Nadine?
Yeah, I got an email off the Rotunda after I put in a complaint yesterday about the TV show. They got back to me.
What did they say?
They said, I note your reservation regarding Cinnamon Series 3 of the Rotunda, but I would like to assure you team considered this very carefully, and they firmly believed that it was in the public interest to provide a unique opportunity for everybody to realise the impact of being pregnant and giving birth during a pandemic. But why was that in the interest of the public? What about the interest of the mothers and fathers? What has this got to do with the public? Why did the public need to see what we were going through? Why couldn't they help us what we were going through at the time instead of letting cameras testing camera members, camera crew? Why could they not test fathers? Those camera people going around in appointment rooms, sitting next to women, asking, did he want to be a part of the series? That's he could have been for a partner.
How do you know that happened, Nadine?
Because a woman told us. A woman was there, and plenty of women said it. And I know one of them that said it.
Okay, you're very, very angry. And it's understandable because we've been covering this item now. Well, the whole issue with maternity hospital began about 2 years ago when we got about 3 weeks of women telling their difficult stories about treatment in various maternity hospitals. And with the exception of the Master of the Coombe at the time, Chris Fitzpatrick, the maternity hospitals weren't at all happy with the programme and women telling of their experiences. Stay there, Nadine. Kate, good afternoon. You contacted us about the programme as well. Why?
Hiya, Joe. Long-time listener, first-time mother here.
Great. Congratulations.
I gave birth during the pandemic as well, so I had the same restrictions as Nadine. And I'm not happy with the statements that are coming out about the programme. Like, the production company are saying that there were 6 cameras and they were just installed in the delivery suites, and that's not true. When you watch the programme, you can see a roving camera in the shop, in the theatre, in the NICU, like in the theatre where there's a baby being delivered. You can see someone, like a roving camera, you know, like a mobile one at a 20-week scan. Even if there are fixed cameras, they need to be installed and maintained. They need to be checked at every use. They were probably put in every delivery suite. That's a lot of maintenance. Like, they're all people, like Nadine is pointing out, that aren't parents. Like, they're completely unrelated and unnecessary, non-essential staff related to birthing that were included in the hospital. A quarter of pregnancies end, sadly, like, before delivery. Like, it's a lot more going on in the Rotunda than healthy births. So you have partners that are sitting outside in the cars receiving the worst news of their life, and you have lads inside filming. Like, whether or not the majority of the filming was done with remote cameras, some of it wasn't. And you had people receiving the worst news they'll ever get in their life, sitting out in their cars or missing the delivery of their baby and yet non-essential staff are allowed into the hospital. Even if they are tested regularly, like Nadine said, the people could have been, the parents could have been tested as well. And it shows a big lack of imagination by the production company and RTE also. If you watch something like Gardener's World, they were self-filming all the little segments. If you watch Emma Willis delivering babies on Channel 4, all the parents just filmed everything on their mobiles, and then they did all the to-camera stuff, like the interviews outside and so on. Like, they could have been more creative than just saying it's totally necessary. They just went with what they did before. I don't know if that was cheaper or simpler, but they could have done something else.
A woman was next to me in a bed. She gave birth in the bed in the prenatal ward while her husband was downstairs because the doctors did not have time to go down and get him. We all got evicted from the prenatal ward while that woman gave birth in the bed next to us, while her husband was downstairs missing off.
RTE say, now remember, RTE wouldn't have got in unless the Rotunda let them in. For filming this season...
Oh, that part.
Sorry, your line is just so bad, Nadine. No, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. I'll read out the RTE statement. We believe it in our public service remit, and our objective in making this series is to offer an important insight into Irish life in 2021. For filming this season, we reduced our footfall in the hospital to the bare minimum, with a lot of filming taking place off-site. The majority of filming in the hospital was recorded by remote cameras controlled from outside the building. Additional research and filming was produced by a single person or on occasion by a compact two-person crew. Strict COVID-19 infection prevention and control protocols were followed at all times by the production. Kate, what do you think of that statement from RTE?
Well, like I mentioned already, at least four scenes last night were filmed by that mobile crew. Like, they weren't fixed cameras. So it just does not seem fair. This is all happening over 10 months. They filmed that show over 10 months. It's not like they do it over 2 weeks and, like, wham, bam, there's a couple of births. Mm-hmm. And it was all happening before pregnant people were advised to take the vaccine as well. So there's unvaccinated people wandering around with cameras, like Nadine described, while other women are giving birth. 10 months is a very long time. Going around the waiting rooms asking, like, trying to solicit people to be on the show while people are waiting again for the worst news of their life or for a scan when their partner can't be sitting beside them just isn't appropriate. Like, I don't see this as it's a grey area. To me, this is a binary issue, a binary thing of, like, there shouldn't have been extra staff in the hospital. This was not appropriate. There was other ways it could have been done, like plenty of other television shows around the world in 2020 and 2021.
They use people's misery for entertainment for the public.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean, Nadine? What do you mean by that?
People got the worst news of their life. I've known people that walked in for their 12-week scan and got told their baby had no heartbeat. People got found out that babies had severe defects. Everything you can think of. And crew members were allowed to walk in and out of them appointment room, asking people do they want to partake in that show.
Yeah, and it's an hour long.
That could have been their partner sitting there talking to them, not a crew member.
Yeah. And it's an hour-long show, just telling. It's on RT2, but it's an hour-long. It's on at 9:30.
It's not a one-stop show,
which is the best slot of the...
It's a series.
It's a series, yeah.
So it wasn't just a one-stop in the hospital. You were there for a few weeks to do a series.
And was your access to your baby restricted during the pandemic in the hospital?
Yeah, because I had him after 12 o'clock at midnight.
Yeah.
And they classed that as seeing him for that day. And I was not allowed to see him for another 24 hours. I had to book an appointment, an available appointment. So that morning was already booked up for after the 24 hours. So I had to wait longer to book a half an hour appointment to see my child. I got thrown out after the half an hour because all my time was up. And I asked when was my child's father allowed to see him. And he got told he's not allowed to see him for a week. And after the week, it'd be 15 minutes.
So your baby's dad didn't see his...
After delivery for 7 days.
He was allowed in at delivery, obviously.
Yes. So he met me at the lift at the delivery suite.
But isn't there some issue... well, I've heard this from a number of professionals, medics involved with the hospital on RTE programmes, that whatever it is about the Rotunda, that the majority of... people who, partners or whatever, are not vaccinated. They said 60%.
But the vaccines weren't out November 2020 when we started.
You're totally on top of it. Yeah, you have up your dates, yeah.
In November 2020, the vaccines weren't out then, so none of the crew was vaccinated.
And it isn't the hospital setting the restrictions as well, Joe. It's the government, right? So it's not the government saying, "Oh, well,
It is a hospital setting the restrictions.
Is it okay?
Oh, well, no, I don't. No,
it's not either hospital management
each hospital. And we discovered this again when we did the way women. I don't know whether you remember that. I think it was 3 weeks we were inundated with calls that women had difficult experiences during childbirth in maternity hospitals. Every hospital is different. Every hospital is independent, for a start.
Like, your partner's not even allowed to go into the shop. That's literally just through the doors to get a drink while he's standing there morning, noon and night. But crew members are allowed in. You're not even allowed to use the toilet.
Well, did we ask, I'm told now we don't know if the crew were not vaccinated. Can we ask them, were they vaccinated last November? And how do you think that's the date? Well, we'll ask
November 2020 to the June 2020.
There was no, the vaccines didn't come in here till a few days after Christmas.
Yeah, so none of them were vaccinated.
Well, can we ask RTE where the crew, were they or were not vaccinated? We're not accusing anyone of anything. It's, or maybe they'd say they didn't film until January or whatever.
No, they returned to put out themselves to start recording November 2020.
Yeah, okay. Okay, but you know the maternity hospital, we've learned this before, are a law unto themselves.
They make up rules as they go.
Well, they say we make up rules in the interests of staff and patients and health and safety. Though we presume all the staff have been double jabbed for a long time now. We're now into September, nearly a year after they started filming, according to you, Nadine.
Yeah.
I think we got calls on this over a year ago about this 20-week scan not being allowed in, about women going in on their own to be given bad news at the 20-week scan or thereafter, and the partner sitting out in the car having to come out and not just transport that bad news and try and take in that horrific news, but then to sit into a car and busy Parnell Square or busy Marion Square and break it to your husband that our baby is gone. Anyway, Kate, your final. What did you do? How did you do on the 20-week scan, Kate?
We were completely alone for the whole thing, just with the timing of my pregnancy. My husband was allowed in when I was in active labour, which is only 6 or 7 hours, and then he was kicked out and could only see the baby for 2 hours a day then. So we were in the coom. So we had it good, everything went quite well. I'm ringing because I'm sure there's plenty of women listening to this that would like to ring. And it would be too upset because it was very upsetting for people watching the show last night. I was in tears watching this morning. I just thought it was terrible, terribly unfair. I think they should have been more sensitive to what's happening in the world around them and just filmed it outside and let the parents send stuff on their phone. No fault to the return to staff or to the parents involved. It's exciting for the parents. Not to do with the return of staff, but it was very tone deaf of RTE, and I think it's a disgrace.
Linda Kelly, 51551 is the text number. Linda, you're listening, and I don't know whether you saw the programme or know about the programme, but your point, please.
Yeah, no, I did sit down and watch the programme last night because I really couldn't believe that actually this would be allowed happen, that, you know, an RTE crew would be allowed into a hospital when people were told they had to go through everything on their own. And really, when I sat down to watch it, I was really shocked that they didn't actually address the restrictions at all. I saw the statement yesterday, you know, to say that they were doing this from a public service perspective. And if they'd actually documented what it was like to be pregnant and give birth during COVID, then maybe you could understand it. But they didn't do that at all. And I found it really, really hard because I gave birth last summer. And I had a planned section and after the operation and they wanted to move me back to the ward. And my husband was told, you go out that door, she's gone up to the ward. And I wasn't allowed to see him again for another 3 days until I was discharged. And he missed all of those first few days with our daughter. And I just couldn't believe that none of that was captured in the show. And that's what actually it's like. You're on your own.
I presume there's 6 episodes. Nadine, do you know, they're an hour long, maybe there's only three, and we'll find out as well. But I know, for example, Primetime are constantly around. It's they're on to us saying, it's the only way we could do it under GDPR. Can we contact some of our callers and ask them, would they be willing to phone a researcher in Primetime or whatever, including, I think they did a programme at Long Cove that we helped them with in terms of ringing callers and asking them. We do it all the time. So we could have done the same if they'd asked us for hundreds of women who phoned in about difficulties during the pandemic, and we would have done it using the same GDPR protocols as well. Emma Carroll.
Yeah, hi, Joe.
Okay, you say you couldn't watch the programme. Why?
I couldn't. I mean, I've been campaigning with the Better Maternity Care campaign for over a year now.
Okay.
I gave birth to my first child in April of 2020, last year, at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was horrific. It'll never leave me. Unfortunately, my partner and I lost our second baby 2 weeks ago. Despite the guidance and despite everything that I knew and I've campaigned and fought for, my partner and I, despite knowing that our baby had died, we're still separated by the comb in the EPAU. So I had to walk through the antenatal clinic in the comb by myself. I had to sit and wait by myself for upwards of 40 minutes. It was awful. Knowing that, again, that our baby had gone, my partner outside desperately wanting to hold my hand and to comfort me, especially after everything we'd been through with my first daughter. Once I got into the consultation, then I had to fight with the doctor nearly to get him to come in. She couldn't see why it was important that he be there. And as it transpired, she hadn't actually read my file, so she didn't know the baby had died. So she's asking me lovely questions about, how I was getting on and my symptoms and all these kinds of things, despite the fact that the baby was gone. So it was hugely distressing. And this was before my partner had arrived in. So I was faced with all these questions alone. So it really was horrific.
So to come back to the programme, what do you think of what Nadine and Kate and Linda are saying?
I mean, I fully agree. It's utterly tone deaf and insensitive. I mean, the Rotunda have made a big deal about, we're the best in terms of our restrictions and we know exactly what we need to do to keep women and babies safe. And yes, they're talking at one side of their mouth and saying that, and on the other hand, they're freely allowing film crews and producers in. And it's utterly tone deaf. I mean, the programme itself is important in the sense that it is important that we hear these stories and we see people's experiences. But I mean, it has to be an accurate reflection of what's happening at the minute, and it doesn't seem to have been that at all. I mean, as I say, I couldn't physically face watching it. I felt sick at the thought of having to relive any ounce of what I had been through. But my co-campaigner there, Linda Kelly, she was keeping us abreast of what was going on in the programme and letting us know.
What was the feeling in the campaign, Emma? In your WhatsApp group or whatever about it?
Immense disappointment. I mean, we have been campaigning, and every single campaigner, there's only a tiny group of us, we've all been affected by these maternity restrictions. We know how damaging they are. We have spoken to thousands and thousands of people between us who have gone through the most harrowing experiences. Like, I run the page called In Our Shoes COVID Pregnancy on Instagram and Facebook. And people only need to flick through the first couple of stories there to see the horrors that people are going through. Yeah. And I suppose we all feel it as campaigners so deeply, the pain that is being caused to people. And we just want more than anything for that to stop. I woke up with a pit in my stomach this morning, like a bigger pit than I've ever had over the course of this campaign. And it was purely because I was worried for people. Like, I've had people coming to me desperately this morning looking for support, looking for contact for support groups. You know, they're spiraling after being through the system last year and this year. And now they feel like they have to relive it all again because this is being thrown at them on the TV. And it's just... I just want to give everyone a hug that's been affected. And I don't apologise on behalf of a hospital system that prioritises whatever revenue they're getting or whatever entertainment they're getting out of putting people on TV. I don't want to apologise on behalf of the people that are making the decisions about these restrictions. But honestly, I am so sorry to anybody that has had to go through this and has to go through the horror that is the restrictions. And just know that you're not alone.
Can we find out from RT? Is it three episodes or men? Can we find out these basic questions? Where the crew vaccinated? How many more? Are you saying that RT should not broadcast the next two episodes?
Sorry,
the remaining episodes until we find out how many there are.
I think it's not difficult to read the room. As I say, these restrictions have had far-reaching implications. You know, the Psychological Society of Ireland has spoken out against them. The Midwives Association of Ireland have spoken out against them and spoken about the harm being caused not only to patients but to staff. I just think it's utterly tone-deaf. And it's just causing more harm than good. I mean, you only need to search the hashtag The Rotunda on Twitter to see, you know, to read the room. Mm. It's very obvious that this is causing a lot of hurt. It's not even anger. It's such a deep hurt. It's salt in the wounds of people. Like, I mean, 60,000 people a year give birth.
Yeah, yeah.
And tens of thousands of people have been affected by these restrictions. And while I'm delighted, I might add, for the families on the show, and I'm delighted that they have a platform to share their story, it's really ignoring, you know, the impact of these restrictions. I think it's tone deaf. And
am I right in saying that hospitals can basically decide themselves what the visiting arrangements are?
Yep, that's absolutely the case.
And is it different between different hospitals? It is, isn't it?
Yes. A significant difference. So if you look to, for example, the Seja group, which kind of are in the west of the country, so Galway, Mayo areas, they're very lenient. They're practically pre-pandemic, not fully, but they're able to
What
do
hospitals
it.
Are we talking about there, Emma?
So Galway University Hospital.
Okay,
and
the maternity unit there. They have maternity units.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. But if you compare Dublin, for example, so the Rotunda still have very harsh restrictions in place, and they've come out with their, I don't want to say PR tropes over the last couple of weeks, justifying them. And 2 kilometres across the Liffey, the National Maternity Hospital have also pretty much gone back to pre-pandemic access for partners. So if they can do it with similar infrastructural issues as the Rotunda, you know, they're similar ages, similar staff profiles.
The buildings, you mean.
Exactly, yeah. 2 kilometres across the Liffey, you know, you can have much more support from your partner than you would in the Rotunda.
Okay, so the Hottest Street are much, I know it doesn't, it's not fully proper use the word, but are more lean, are less strict than the Rotunda.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. And the other thing about the National Maternity Hospital as well is we haven't heard from the master or senior management then coming out and defending the restrictions and blaming partners for not being vaccinated or blaming women for not being vaccinated and, you know, putting the blame on the service users as opposed to the hospital for not implementing the right procedures to facilitate partners. The National Maternity Hospital haven't done that. They haven't insulted and caused more pain to their patients by doing that. And that's exactly what the Rotunda have done.
We're told 6 episodes, it's just 6 hours of the Rotunda will be broadcast. Yeah. So can Scratch Films, who made it, can they come on and tell us, give us a, maybe they say we're going to deal with the, maybe they've taken callers from Live Line, I don't know, I wouldn't be on top of everything that happens here, all the requests. Maybe they are going to deal with the whole issue of partners and, but it's not visits we're talking about, it's necessary accompaniments.
Exactly,
and to be honest, it's not visits with a bottle of Lucozade, a box of milk tray, and a bunch of grapes.
It's not a band coming in with some balloons there. It's essential support for women who are on understaffed wards. I mean, my heart goes out to every single midwife and staff member in maternity units across the country because they are working in extremely difficult pandemic conditions, firstly, but also highly underfunded units. I mean, the infrastructure isn't there, and neither is the staffing level. So, and it's women who are suffering as well because of it. I mean, I know I had zero help postnatally on the ward. None. Like, you give birth and you're expected to look after a newborn, no matter what condition you're in. And you could be after major surgery. I thank my lucky stars that I was not, but I'm still very weak. And I mean, that's where a partner comes in. Like, they are essential support. So it's just beggars belief. I mean, it's not serving anybody. And I mean, there is an argument that I've heard people say that, you know, by keeping partner, you know, by keeping restrictions, that units are somehow protecting their patients. But to that, I would say they're not keeping partners out and therefore they're not keeping COVID out. They're letting partners in at arbitrary time points, such as how far dilated a woman is in labour or, you know, at certain times during the day for visiting that, you know, it could be an hour, it could be 2 hours, and that's well beyond being a close contact for COVID. And then they're kicking them out again. So if they're just depriving people of support, you know, they're leaving partners. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't imagine. It was bad for me going through it, but I can't imagine being in my partner's shoes when I was giving birth last year and he had to walk out of a hospital after we had complications after handing my baby over to me. And I was a shade warmer than death. 2 weeks ago, he had to stand outside the coom while we both knew our baby was gone and somehow keep it together and try text me over WhatsApp and try, you know, keep me comforted somehow when all he needed to do was hold my hand. you know, and he was let in eventually. So he infected the entire unit, you know, by COVID standards. So why are we being deprived of support in the meantime? None of it makes any sense. None of it at all. And I mean, they're not taking into consideration either the impacts, like the serious, significant impacts on people's mental health. And that, I don't say that in a fluffy way. I say that in a genuine way. I mean, as a campaign, we speak to people all the time. And I don't say this lightly when I say that we have had to have near crisis interventions for people that have contacted us who have been on the brink, that genuinely might not be here had they not contacted us.
Stay with us, Emma, please. We're talking about, again, at the instigation of our listeners, the programme, The Rotunda. It's the third series, and it's an hour-long fly-on-the-wall documentary. It's made by Scratch Films in The Rotunda, obviously with the permission of Rotunda, and very, very explicit permission of The Rotunda. But RTE say all COVID protocols were adhered to, and they reduced the footfall of staff to an absolute minimum and used a lot of remote cameras, but still people are, well, that's let people hear the RTE position, but they should also hear that people are very, very upset about this programme being broadcast at this time. And there's five more to come. There's five more hours. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715.
We will be coming back, and thanks, Emma and Linda and Kate and the other callers. But we will be coming back to The Rotunda later on the programme, such as the TV series last night, and people, Emma articulated so well, as did Nadine and the other callers, that they felt that the programme was tone deaf, that the whole idea of letting a camera crew in. Nadine thinks it was from last November, so therefore she argued the crew weren't vaccinated. We're trying to get an answer to that question specifically from Scratch Films, who made it. And also we're trying to, and this is, we need to address this before the end of the programme, because people are saying that the programme should be, the other five episodes should be postponed because of the heavy restrictions that people, women and their families and their partners are undergoing because of COVID, they're told. Very, very, very strict restrictions, if you pardon the double use of the word. And we need to find out before the end of the programme from Scratch Films, is that issue going to be addressed? And they have to tell us honestly, is the issue of the way women complained on this programme and other programmes well over a year ago, and filming only started last November, is that at all addressed in the programme, The Rotunda, or were they allowed to address it by does The Rotunda, I'm sure they don't have any hand actor, well, they have the hand acting part and given permission, especially during the pandemic. Okay, we will be coming back to that, such as the volume, and there's no point in me saying it otherwise, and it's irrelevant whether I'm popular in this campus or not, but RTE need to consider the response of those women who are centre, front and centre. And Nadine put it so well. How come The Rotunda decided that letting a camera crew in was more important than letting her partner in when she was having their baby? Back to Feral Cats, which animated so many people yesterday and indeed Tuesday. Catherine O'Connell. Catherine, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
What's his name?
Oh God! Well, I'm calling him Psycho Cat. He was christened Peep, and we got him from the DSPCA last Friday. All done online because you can't visit the DSPCA.
Yeah.
And he decided to spend the weekend in the chimney, and as a result, my sitting room's destroyed. He's not a very happy bunny. He came out finally on Sunday night. And he's more like a snake than a cat. He's hissing. He's hiding behind the armchair. His paw prints are all over the carpet, the walls. It looks like he's jumped on the walls during the night time.
And that's Pete there. That's his cry.
That's him last night, yeah. I'm watching the TV.
That's him in your living room after coming down the chimney.
Yeah. Every night we get that now. And
and is he by the way, is he a he or a she? Do we know?
He's a he.
He's a he. Tomcat.
Yeah.
Is he
yeah.
I presume he's spayed.
Yes, they would have done that up in the DSPCA.
Well, how long did he spend up the chimney?
3 days.
And where did he sit up the chimney?
Well, you know, up a chimney, there's a kind of a bit of a ledge.
Yeah,
that's where he was. And we actually didn't know he was there. We thought he'd managed to get out. And then my partner heard something and we said, oh, my God, is he up the chimney? And it was till the following day we saw the paw print. He'd obviously come down when the sitting room went quiet when we went to bed. And he came down and we got up the next morning and saw his paw prints all over the carpet, all over the tables, the windowsill, the radiator, destroyed. But at that point, then he must have scarpered back up the chimney. So all day long, we were trying to poke him down and he'd play with the thing we were putting up the chimney to poke him with. And he finally came down Sunday night and we had prepared some cardboard that if he did come down, we'd block the chimney. So the chimney's now blocked.
Okay.
He can't get up it. But he's hiding behind mainly an armchair or a sideboard.
And when you try and approach
him, he's not having it.
And how does he react when you go try and get him from behind where he's hiding at the
minute? Oh, well, he wouldn't. I mean, I'm not going too close because he's very scary. He hisses. He went for me on Sunday night and he gave me quite the clobber on my hand. Not so much a scrape, but a thump. He's quite strong.
Well, what's that noise he's making?
That's him. That's
yeah, but what is that noise from a cat?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard it before. It's like I've had cats all my life.
Oh my God, that's frightening.
But that's what we have. And even in the middle of the night, I've woken up, you know, and you might go to the loo, and I can hear him in the sitting room at 4 in the morning, and he's doing that. So I actually think he's feral. And the poor fellow's not a happy bunny at all.
He sure isn't. He's after destroying your house.
And the carpet, he's had to go with the carpet as well.
But what about food and...
Yeah, he's easing away, no problem. He's easing up when we're present. He obviously waits until we leave the room.
And what, you leave and out the, chicken for him it, or it,
No,
milk.
It's the dry kibble that he would have had up in the place, you know. So we haven't changed his diet. He's drinking his water. He's using the litter tray, which is good, thank God. So at least he's not doing any toilet on my carpet. But the carpet's destroyed now anyway, so... the walls, I haven't cleaned them yet because I'm waiting. You see, he's still, see by the picture, he's black and white, but he's not. He's black and grey now because of all the soot.
Have you left him on his own in the house? I mean, you must have had some reason to go to the shops or...
Yeah, he's on his own now because I'm at work. You see, you have to, and he's in the one room and the plan was...
Are you not worried what he's doing in the room at the moment?
Well, he's mucked it up already. He can't do anything except he set the alarm off last night. We went to the pictures. And I got home and didn't realise I had a phone call from my neighbour that the alarm had gone off. And she approached the house and wasn't aware we'd a new cat and saw this thing flying around the sitting room.
God.
I think he might be returning to the DSPCA.
If you can catch him.
Well, this is the thing. I think I might have to get them to come and get him because I'm not going near him. He's frightening.
Would a wheelie bin fit into your living room?
Well, it would.
I'm thinking, but I'm not advocating it, but good God. And what is he saying? Does anyone know what's this? Is that a fearful cry? Is it a threatening cry? Is it a territorial cry? It's very.
Yeah. I know. I've heard cats do that before. But I've never sort of inquired why.
Listening to that makes my stomach shudder.
Do you want to come over tonight?
No, thanks. Hang on, Catherine. We have Conor Fitzpatrick is from a 3-person small charity called Cat and Dog Protect. Conor, do you recognise that sound that Peep is making?
Absolutely, Joe. That sounds like my house last night. that sounds like quite a distressed cat.
Good God.
Absolutely.
You want to hear me? I'm a bit distressed as well.
Yeah,
I can imagine. I've only caught a short bit of the situation. A cat like that is going to have to be confined into a smaller compartment just to get used to you. He's too much freedom there to roam. I don't know how he got to your place in the first place without being worked on, but this is the problem we're having.
It's Catherine O'Connor, so we call her Cat for the purpose of this program. Connor, Cat ran up the chimney.
I heard.
And stayed there for 3 days and then came down and destroyed the living room while they were asleep. Is that normal?
Certainly not. Yeah, I mean, you have to start with a plan. This is a cat more than likely that's coming from the street. All they know is that feral lifestyle. So to be just left free into your house, it's bad news.
And do you think he was going up the chimney to try and get out?
More than likely, just to hide. He probably knows that no one can get near him. He waits till everyone goes asleep in the evening and comes out then to play.
Kath, has he gone for you?
He did. He had a go with me there, and was it Sunday night? But I mean, as a result, we've tried to approach him and all the cutie things, but he's hissing, so you wouldn't want to, and he's quite strong.
And what's a hissing, Connor?
Hissing is to stay away from me. I feel threatened.
And what's that? What's that awful cry? The stomach curdling cry.
It's absolute distress. Animal is very stressed.
And would a cat attack you?
Absolutely. Territorial, yeah. I'd say he obviously hasn't been worked on. There needs to be systems in place of a fostering program.
And what do you say?
That's what I am. I'm the foster.
Okay.
Well, you're the foster, but Peep's an imposter at this stage. You didn't get what you're looking for. He's psycho cat.
Totally.
So, Connor, what should Catherine do?
Catherine, if you're saying that you got this cat through the DSPCA, I would absolutely get in touch with them. It's similar to what we would do. Our foster, our program, we're big on actually confining the cat in a large dog crate. Just letting them get used to the fact that you're with them. Mm-hmm. You have to be consistent with going to them, feed them. No harm for a cat to be a little hungry when you're going at him with food. He kind of starts understanding that.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying Catherine should have got a cage?
Absolutely.
And put him in the cage in the living room or whatever for
absolutely.
A few weeks.
And I know, and it's not something we love to do, but for you to change this cat's brain, that's what's going to happen.
Do you like cats, Connor?
I love them. I've no kids, Joe. It's all animals in my world.
Well, do you? But you know the whole thing here. Are you a cat man or a dog man?
Both. Absolutely both. And I'm trying to prove that everywhere I go. People tell me they're animal lovers, but they hate cats, Joe. It just makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you do with feral cats?
Well, basically, we get the call. We're trying to become the driving force of trap, neuter, return. Unfortunately, we have such a huge number of ferals across the country now that there's nowhere that can take them. You have Catherine there that's putting herself in a disastrous situation. That's what happens when you're taking an adult feral into your house. So basically, we go and we provide a trapping service. We bring them to public vets. We get the cats neutered, get them treated, any injuries sorted and looked after, antibiotics. And then they're generally returned to that area. Providing, there's a food source and some shelter there for them. It's just the breeding process, Joe. It's the power of numbers. It's 3 litters a year. It's 4, 5, 6 kittens. And then in 5 months' time, sure, everyone's jumping on everyone. It's the first time with them.
So one cat could have 15, 16 kittens in a year?
Oh, more, Joe. Yeah, absolutely. I personally, this week has actually been our biggest week ever. I've trapped 43 adult cats and we've taken 12 newborn kittens from South Dublin. It's non-stop.
Can I swap you the psycho for the kitten?
But that's why, Connor, that's why this is completely taken off in terms of our calls, that so many people are now encountering feral cats for some reason. Why is that?
There's so many people out there that will put a bowl of food out for a cat without actually realising what's happening in the background. Like I said, the 3 litters they're non-stop from January to December. Like I said, it's the power of numbers.
Okay, hey, stay there. Hey, Joe with RT.ie, we're talking about feral cats and Catherine. Catherine has a cat in her house. She got him on Friday. He promptly disappeared up the chimney and stayed there for 3 days. Then he came. Well, he was coming down at night time, covered in soot, obviously, and wrecking the house, the room he was confined to. Then he'd run back up if any human came into the room. Now he's down, he came down the chimney, so they blocked up the chimney in a pincer movement, and then he's now in behind the armchair, and this is the room, and this is the sound he's making when Catherine approaches. Sweet Jehovah. Adrian.
Hi, Joe, how are you?
What is this cat saying?
Stay back. In my experience, it's a very similar sound
I just text in after hearing the story because it's quite similar to my own experience.
What happened?
Well, a bit, I suppose, dissimilar to Catherine's. I fed a feral cat, and I didn't adopt it now, but I was feeding it over a brief time, and I suppose I got quite attached to it. I gave it a name, Snufflepuss.
Snufflepuss, yeah.
And it was okay when I didn't, when I just feed it out in the back garden, but eventually when I let it into the house, and that's it when it became distressed, and a similar story to Catherine's. It went up the chimney as well, actually. So and the same sounds, but it did. It was cornered in the sitting room, and it kind of I suppose not attacked, but it did go for my partner at the time. So it's just a similar story. Yeah, we eventually got it trapped and brought it to the DSPCA.
Jesus, why is it a cat that I have then?
You might have got him. And what age is your cat, Kat?
I think he's between 7 months and a year. I've forgotten because the ad's gone down because I fostered him. But they did say in the initial ad that he had been rehomed once before and it didn't work out. So
I wonder, was that the reason, Kat?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, you know.
He had been...
If I'd known he was feral, I wouldn't have taken him, you know.
Yeah.
I'd like people to. Is it okay if we post that photograph of Pete coming out of the chimney?
Yeah, the before and after, because he looks lovely before.
Are we breaking after any breaking any GDPR?
He looks like one of the hyenas from The Lion King now.
You're lucky it wasn't Christmas you stuck up the chimney, or Santa might have got a surprise.
Yeah. So you think that sound is just distress?
Well, it's very similar to the sound I would have had. Now, this is 18 months ago, I suppose. And, yeah, I don't know, is it a case of being cornered in the home or something? Mm. But, yeah, it's very similar. Mm.
And, you see, if there was no COVID guidelines, we would have gone up there. Because I actually adopted a cat from there a few years back. So you can go up and you see them all and you can hear them all and maybe hold them. I can't remember if you're allowed to hold them. But this, you can. So it's all online with just a picture. And if I'd heard him like that and seen that he wouldn't have liked to be near me, I probably would have said, no thanks. You know?
So I've just tweet the photograph on at RT Liveline or at Joe Liveline. And people have a look. This peep on the left looks like, he looks like he's off a can of cat food. He's so gentle.
Butter wouldn't melt, yeah.
Butter wouldn't melt. And then this photograph beside is this cat from hell. And then we send the, can I post the photo? We checked under GDP paw law, and we can post photographs of Pete. But can we post a photograph of your living room, Catherine?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, there's all the little toys and stuff around, and his dish, and there you see the paw prints beside. And then behind the couch, that's where the big amount of stuff is.
How are you going to clean that house?
Well, I haven't. The couch stain has stayed. Because then I got a new couch on Sunday morning. And I had to cover it all up. So the sitting room looks like a mess because I'm afraid he's going to destroy the new couch.
Okay. Stay with us. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
joe@rt.ie. Catherine O'Connell has contacted us about her... cat, beautiful cat. I say the photograph up on her RT Liveline or at Joe Liveline that arrived in her house from Cat Paradise. He looked absolutely gorgeous last Friday, but then he promptly shot up the chimney and shot down the chimney. This is not Mrs. Slocum's pussy from Are You Being Served? This is a very, very psycho cat at this stage. It's not funny. I'm laughing, but it's not funny. No, I tell you, my tummy goes when I hear that awful sound. Patricia McDowell is in Drogheda. Patricia, joe@rt.ie. You've loads of feral cats. Tell us.
I do, Joe. Yeah, I've loads. I feel Catherine's pain. I really do.
And how many feral cats do you have living around you?
Well, I prefer not to say, Joe. It's kind of embarrassing. They're all neutered. They're all really well looked after.
Oh, are they well done, yeah?
Yeah, so I captured them and stuff. Like, they're mixed stories. But with Catherine, just going back to Catherine, Joe, what I would do with that cat is she can either contact the people that she got the cat off, because that cat is distressed. Jesus, Joe, anybody, you know, you just totally distressed. Or she can give them a go, give them a chance. You know, they will turn. Like, if it's in them to turn, they will turn.
But have you seen the photograph of them before and after?
No, I'd be afraid to look.
It's like it's like The Exorcist.
Catherine, call him Sooty.
No, I had one of those before he got knocked down by a car.
Call him Sweep.
But no, Catherine, or what I would do, Catherine, with him is just give him time. Give him a few weeks. I had a cat and, it went on for a month.
Yeah, but he was horrible. Patricia, was he in your house destroying the gaff?
Yes, climbing the curtain, yes.
But was he covered? Was he covered in soot?
No, Joe, because we blocked the chimney. I look at where old hands I had now.
You're well out.
But you see, the problem is, I mean, I'll probably be lighting the chimney fairly soon. So if he's going to go up again,
he probably won't go up again, Catherine. Don't light the chimney because it's over, maybe.
And do you think the idea that who had earlier on, Jer, was it? He's saying put the cat in a cage for a few weeks.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, Patricia?
Yeah, we get both the run of the living room and we just left them at us, like, we sat in, watch TV. We didn't go near them. We didn't try to play with them, pick them up. It went on for a month and eventually one evening I was sitting on the sofa and he popped up beside me, scratched his head and he went away then for another 3 weeks.
Okay, Gillian Board is there from... Head of Education and Media with DSPCA. Gillian, what should Catherine do with Peep, the psycho cat?
Obviously she needs to get back in touch with the fostering department, but I have to say, I have a psycho cat, very similar to that. That noise that I hear is what I hear every night in my house, because my
how could you live with that?
I'll tell you what story is, right? Every night, my cat, who is a gorgeous little 1.5-year-old tabby, well, he's not tiny, he basically carries around this soft toy fish, and he will carry it up and down the stairs and around the place, making that noise. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people don't understand is cats vocalise for who's around them. So it's one of these myths that cats actually don't meow to other cats. They only meow to humans. They learn to find out what vocalisation us humans recognise. And it could be a simple situation that she's giving him attention for him making that noise.
Now, what's Peep saying to Catherine?
Which? What's he saying? I don't know. That will very much depend, but it could be anything. And with any cat, the best thing you can do is they're not like a dog. They don't like people fawning over them with attention. What they like is they like to be ignored and they like to come to people in your own time. Mm-hmm. And we're always joking and saying, if you don't like cats and you're going into somebody's house, the best thing you can do is run up to the cat going, "Here, kitty, kitty, kitty," because the cat will turn around and say, "I'm not having anything to do with you." And if you don't like cats, that's a great way of not having the cat come to you. But if you ignore the cat and go and sit quietly down in a chair in the living room and read a book, chances are the cat's going to come over and he'll be curious and he'll want to talk to you. But we always do say it's all about giving cats a bit of time. Every cat has a different personality. We don't always know the story of where our cat has come from. But if she seriously is having problems, then absolutely contact the adoption team in the DSPCA, because, this is why at the moment we are doing a fostering program where the people take the animals, foster them for a few weeks to check that it's a good match. And if it's not a good match, then they can be brought back. But you shouldn't expect a cat to fit into your home instantly. It can take weeks, it can take months. But best thing to do is to give him the bit of space and also to, be in the room with him, but don't be making a big fuss over him. Just sit there quietly, and if he comes to you, Joe, you pet him. So,
can I say, he's a young cat, isn't he, Joe?
He's a what?
He's a young cat, from what I heard. Yeah. I don't know which cat he is.
There's hope for him, there is hope for him.
Well, he wouldn't have been as good as a feral
cat.
But is
there hope for the other cat, Catherine O'Connell?
No, for me. No, that's it. No, that's over for her, bless her. No, but Joe, give her a poor Catherine, if she's stuck, you can just give the cat to me.
That's exactly it.
And Gillian, I asked Connor earlier on from that incredible charity that he runs, a Cats and Dogs Society. He neuters them. He's captured 47 feral cats. He said it's out of control. He's never seen it as populous as it is at the moment.
That's it. Well, see, this is the breeding season for cats.
Oh, is it?
And what happened last year, and it was actually a fantastic year for the cat population last year because of COVID, because the schools were closed, the restaurants were closed, the pubs were closed, people were in their back gardens, people weren't feeding the feral cats, which meant that the population didn't increase because of excess food and overbreeding. So now this year we've got everybody back again feeding. Cats weren't necessarily neutered last year. So we're seeing an explosion of the big cat population generally. And this is the time, this is the end of the breeding season. So it's got a bit out of hand this year. Well, we're the same. We're neutering around. We've got a number of campaigns up in the DSPCA at the moment. I think we're neutering something like 15 cats today, most of which are feral. So it's a process that needs to be done.
And Gillian, what do you think about the argument that cats kill so much wildlife that they do become a threat to the circle of life if there's too many of them?
That's a bit like a generalization in saying that humans kill too many wildlife as well. Not every cat hunts. Some cats will hunt excessively, but not every cat will hunt.
But every cat eats. What do they eat?
They eat what we feed them, what humans feed them, and the majority of the cats out there, and this is something that people forget, the reason we have so many unwanted cats out there is because of human intervention. Humans have not neutered them, and humans have been overfeeding them. And it's a simple situation that if you're going to feed a feral cat coming into your garden, you've got to take responsibility, you've got to neuter it so it's not going to start producing more and more kittens. You know, it's really important, and at the end of the day, if everybody who had a pet cat got it neutered, then there wouldn't be kittens, there wouldn't be unwanted kittens, they wouldn't be living under people's sheds, they wouldn't be producing all these feral cats, and we wouldn't have the problem.
And Gillian, what do you think of, when I asked Connor earlier on, are you a cat or a dog person, he said an animal lover can't love dogs and not love cats. Is that true?
Oh, I don't know. There are a lot of people who are unsure of cats, and I kind of always think, well, if you're not sure whether you like cats, then you've probably never really spent time with a cat. Every single cat has a different personality. So you can't turn around and say, oh, I don't like cats. It's a bit like saying I don't like people. Every single cat has a different personality. You'll never own a cat, two cats that have the same personality.
And Gillian, do you have pets in your house?
I do. I have a dog. I have two cats currently. My older cat there died there last year, and he was 22 years of age. And he was born as a feral, but he lived his life as a wonderful pet cat. He was so affectionate. And I have to say, my tabby, who makes that strange, horrific noise, he wasn't born as a feral. He was born as a friendly cat, but he's a bit nuts now at times.
So, and does Gillian Broad? But does Gillian Broad? We always talk about nominative determinism in this program, in our weekly philosophy slot. But does Gillian Broad? Do you have any boards?
I don't, but I do keep giant African land snails, and I have I'm currently fostering a pygmy African hedgehog, and he gets on quite well with the cats, and my greyhound cross gets bullied by the cats. So yeah, I have plenty of animals.
And what was the other animal you said you had? The great African
African pygmy hedgehog. He's a little white hedgehog.
And before
we're
that you
we're
said
fostering him.
And before that's
giant African land snails. I have them.
What's
for
that?
my education program. They're the giant African snails. They're about the size of your coffee cup. Ugh. I'll bring one into studio sometime and show you. They're fantastic pets.
And does he leave a slinky trail when he?
He does, and it's really nice, soft to your hands. Oh. It's great. They're not good with hand sanitizers though at the moment, so they're not great for handling at the moment.
Okay.
But definitely. Cats definitely are good, but they're different personalities.
Catherine,
so people just have to understand
back to Catherine. Thanks, Gillian. That's Gillian Broad, DSPCA, and all the great work you do. Do I see that? Is he digging up the carpet?
He's done it in a corner of that. Luckily, it's an area not too visible. It's under the radiator, so I don't know why.
Why is he doing that?
I have no idea. Because I wouldn't mind, actually, there's a scratcher, because we have another cat. And there's a scratcher just beside it. So why he didn't go for the scratcher? Because he's actually been, I didn't send you all the pictures, but in the scratcher's got a little hideout underneath, and he's been in there.
Yeah.
So why he didn't use the scratcher, but I just noticed the carpet now he's had a go at it.
Catherine, you be careful. He might end up in the scratcher, which you wake up some morning to this sound in your ear, and it won't be your alarm. Catatonic catastrophe. Think.
Okay.
Cat
anyway,
nine
we'll
tails.
See how we go. I don't know if I'm going to keep him beyond Monday, but I know what they've said. Maybe try a bit longer. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Because I'm afraid to even open the window in our sitting room. So the sitting room's kind of stuffy now. It's got the.
Well, if you open the living room, he'd run, won't he?
Well, that's the problem. So we have to keep it all closed and the litter tray, and we might have to change room.
Okay, Catherine. That's Catherine O'Connell. Thanks all indeed. Right, thanks indeed. Bye bye. Bye bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Now, we've had a call from a staff member in the Rotunda Hospital, Maternity Hospital in Dublin, and we verified that they are a member of staff. And they say they raise concerns with the management, obviously, of the hospital about the filming of this RTE documentary. Six 1 hour episodes began last night during the pandemic, and their concerns were ignored. We verified the identity of the caller, and we've asked the Rotunda for a response. Yvonne, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Did you see the programme?
I actually didn't watch it, Joe. I'm kind of like one of your other callers there. I actually just couldn't bring myself to watch it. It was just too much, given everything that I went through. I had my little gorgeous little girl in January, and it was a pretty awful experience, Joe, from, you know, a pretty traumatizing experience. I mean, the staff and the Rotunda are just unbelievable. I had the most amazing consultant. The midwives are angels for the most part, not all, unfortunately, like any job. There's always one or two, but you know, I couldn't have done it without a couple of absolute angels. But it was a really, really, really awful thing that I'm not over in the slightest, to be honest.
And I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and so there's absolutely no way I could have watched it. But I suppose the reason why I rang, because the women you've already had on were amazing and so articulate and kind of gave everything I needed to say. But I suppose one thing I just wanted to add in terms of the programme was that I really also feel that it was about the way the Rotunda handled the fact that they were doing this series again, because I was going into my appointments and by myself, obviously, very nervous, first-time mother, you know, lots of different things kind of going through your head. And the advertisement for Do You Want to Take Part was all over their hospital. So there was like pamphlets.
Oh, was it? Okay, I didn't know that.
Like flyers, sorry, in the waiting room. And it was very like, hey, like, be on this series, you know. And there was no like, you know, this kind of thing that the Rotunda, sorry, the producers and stuff are saying that it's public service, but there was, and it's about the difficulties of this time. There was no acknowledgement of that in the way it was advertised. There was nothing on the leaflet saying, look, you know, there was absolutely a way to do this. And I did say to your researcher there, I work in the media and I understand, I could see where there would be a real place for this series, actually.
Okay.
Do you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can really see how they could have done this and made it something really good for what's happening to women, and actually given us a voice and given, you know, the partner restrictions a bit of attention. It doesn't sound like they did that. And certainly the way they approached making the show from a person who was going through the process didn't seem to do that. And I know the Rotunda social media, when they first advertised that they were doing the show, they had to basically correct what they put out because it was so, again, it was just sort of this positive, oh, be part of this series again, but no acknowledgement of, in these really difficult times, we want to tell your stories. Do you know what I'm saying, Joe? Like, I just think there's a way to do this, and they really didn't do that, and it was a missed opportunity. You know, if they feel they had to do this series again for whatever reason, and they're commissioned to do it, I just think the responsibility should have been there to really reflect what's going on.
So
and
what
the,
do you... Like, 6 hours of television is a lot
it's very
of...
substantial.
It's incredibly substantial. It's a lot of filming. Yvonne, what do you think they should do with the remaining 5 episodes if it's upsetting people so much? Now, I know this is not... this. We're not saying everyone's upset, obviously, but...
No, of course. And I've seen people who aren't. I've seen people who gave birth during the pandemic and said lovely memories of being in the Rotunda. You know, so it's not everybody's experience. And again, as I said, I'm a pain to say, it's not about the staff. It's not about, you know, the kind of the people that you meet on the ground. It's actually, it's the restrictions, obviously, and the things that you encounter. But I don't think... sorry, your question was what should I do with the rest of the series?
Yes.
To be honest, like, I'd be going back into that edit suite and seeing what they have in terms of actually showing what it was like to give birth during a pandemic, because that's what the series should have been about the difficulties and maybe some of the joy as well. And, you know, maybe I shouldn't have called without actually watching the episode, but as someone said on your show earlier, like, you can just see from the reaction that it didn't cover the realities of what giving birth meant. And I can imagine, Joe, that they didn't do that because it's a light-hearted, fun series for the most part. I know they deal with some really tragic stories too, as they balance out, you know, and I respect that. But I'm just saying that I would say that the reality of how tough and how traumatizing it is for a lot of women to give birth during the pandemic, that probably wasn't what they wanted for their content. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, some of the things I saw, Joe, I mean, I said it to your researcher, this is going to sound really dramatic, but like, it was like some of it being a bit Magdalene Laundry-esque, Joe. Like, when I went up to the pre-labor ward, Joe, I was there for a couple of hours, and there were five other women on the ward with me, behind curtains, on their own, all of them screaming, some of them in pain, looking for their moms, looking for their partners, crying down the phone to their partners, all there by themselves, and poor midwives having to go in and out. They're scared, they're alone, they don't know what's happening.
And when,
they don't know
when was this, Yvonne?
This was January, Joe, end of January.
21.
And it was, I came in the middle of the night because my waters broke at home, and I was actually having a planned C-section because I was had some complications, but I had to still go to the pre-labor ward, obviously, because they had to monitor me until my section
You're
came
saying
around.
There was five women...
Yeah.
In pain, in distress.
In pain, in distress, on their own, behind curtains. And I suppose the thing is, yeah, you are in this old building, this Victorian building. So you kind of feel like you're gone back to the 50s or something. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, what are we...
Shocking.
It's just shocking. Look, that's the thing, Joe.
You see, we can't scratch films have sent us in a photocopy of the RTE statement. Basically saying public service. But this is their blurb online. We want to ask them what is in the next five episodes, and are you going to address the issues that were raised time and time again, not just on this programme, but other programmes, about women in distress with the very strict regulations and changing, varying from hospital to hospital, I hasten to add, during the lockdown. The award-winning series The Rotunda returns to RT2 this autumn with six new episodes charting the highs and lows of pregnancy and childbirth, the world's longest-running maternity hospital. Filmed during the most challenging time in living memory, this series follows 20 birth stories as parents-to-be and staff manage the reality of childbirth in 21. For some, pregnancy and birth will be without any medical complications, while for others, the journey to parenthood will have many challenges that will need to be overcome. The season will also dedicate one episode to revisiting some of the 56 previous birth stories filmed over series. So that's obviously filmed outside, or it's on the filmed over series. But they still didn't answer the question, are they going to address the issue of partners and the distress that's visited on mothers and mothers-to-be and their partners by these very, very severe restrictions. And from what we heard from Emma earlier on, one of the incredible women that been on from the get-go on today, she has a spreadsheet of all the different hospitals, and the Rotunda, she said, is the strictest in terms of, and the Rotunda statement, the most recent one I remember is I think the second week in August, the master saying sick, which shocked me, if it's true. I don't know, you know, it's true or not, but I'm sure it is true, he said it. 60% of the partners in the Rotunda aren't vaccinated, which is... Okay, let me, Yvonne, stay there, please. I'll take the break, and then because more and more people want to come on.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
I asked earlier on, were the crew vaccinated? Because according to Nadine, who's been following the series and seems to know the dates inside out, and she was the first caller that contacted us. She was really upset about the programme going out. As she said, how come the crew were allowed in and my partner wasn't allowed in, and I was the one having the baby and with difficulty. We asked if the crew were vaccinated, and RTE told us they would not be commenting outside of the statement. Well, RTE, wherever you are, that is not good enough. People are going to look for answers. It's a straightforward question. Were the crew vaccinated when they were in the rotunda when the filming began? And for RT to say that they would not be commenting outside of a statement is just not good enough, unfortunately. Tanika Duffy. Tanika, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
The rotunda, what's your observations and position? Again, difficult, I see.
Very difficult, Joe. Yeah, I was saying to the researcher there that I didn't actually watch it. I had it recorded. I actually said to my husband, oh, we have the rotunda tonight. And he said, what's that? And I explained briefly what it was. And he said, I couldn't come in to be with our son for his first week. My son was a week by the time I brought him home. But people were allowed in. Now, I was in Limerick maternity, so it wasn't the rotunda. But still, it's actually insulting to think that this went out. And now my mother gave me her synopsis on it, which was that it was basically around the labour ward. It didn't show women on the postnatal wards on their own with their babies, or women where I was in NEO with my little boy on my own. I couldn't stay or anything. I had to keep coming in and out to him. The parent room was closed. Now, I had my boy, Joe, in April 2020 when COVID was relatively new.
Yeah,
everyone was really scared. So you could almost understand it then, if that makes sense. You know, we kind of, no one really knew what was happening. But just the day I went to bring him home, I was called into a room to say that my little boy was a close contact. He had been a close contact of a paediatrician who had tested positive for COVID. So that was really scary. So bring him home, isolate him for 14 days and just watch his breathing. So that was really, really traumatizing on top of, you know, the traumatizing week we'd had in there. And then I suppose in December 2020, I had a miscarriage. And again, I was one of them women that was told on her own that there was no longer a heartbeat at 13 weeks.
Okay.
So that in itself was traumatizing again. And now I'm expecting a baby this New Year's Eve. And I suppose when I found out in April this year that I was expecting again, I thought, okay, you're due in December, things will be different. And now I'm 4 months away, less than 4 months away, and things really haven't changed all that much, whereas it seems like other restrictions are lifting. You know, the announcements that are coming out, things, a lot of people are vaccinated, etc., but it just feels like nothing, there's no change being made. So hence my stance when I just couldn't watch the show. You know?
Well, first of all, congratulations. I hope the next few months go well.
Thank you, Joe.
Incredible time to have a baby New Year's Eve. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So what do you think should be done about this? Because I'm taken aback by the level. No, I'm sorry, I'm not taken aback by the level of distress because we've had it before. But I'm taken aback by some of the statements from the rotunda. We had a staff member who contacted us and we verified this, saying that they objected to the filming, to the management or whatever in the rotunda, and they were ignored. We asked a very simple question, were the crew vaccinated when the filming started last November? And RTE told us they would not be commenting outside of their statement, which basically said it's public service. Well, they have to. I'm baffled. I'm taken aback by the reaction of the rotunda. I'm taken aback that Scratch Films won't tell us. Are they going to address those issues that were so prominent in all media platforms when the filming began last November? And then RTE to say they won't be telling us if the crew were vaccinated or not. It's a difficult one. It's not going to go away. Unfortunately,
because it seems as though women are being ignored. That's what it feels like. It feels like women are like, there's Linda from Women Ascend and Emma from In Our Shoes. They're fantastic on social
incredible
media.
Incredible organisation. Yeah.
They're so good. But it just feels like it's falling on deaf ears that we're still in the same situation. And then I suppose it's difficult as a woman when you go through things like this and you're trying to explain it to friends, maybe your family members, and they've never been through it or they don't know really what you're talking about. And yet a show is aired that was filmed last year and not giving off, from what I've heard, now I haven't seen it, but it's not giving off the same...
No, I do know because I was filming Monday and Tuesday down in Galway for Meaning of Life. RTE are extraordinarily strict about COVID regulations, extraordinarily strict. when you're filming, where there's a crew, whatever, and rightly so. But again, this was made by an independent company. I'm sure they were strict, but all the crew are vaccinated, by the way. We were all vaccinated, including people we were interviewing. But we're asking a simple question about the production company last November. Were they vaccinated when the Rotunda decided it was okay to let a film crew in? They say it was very small numbers, but only takes one. They let one to start. They said they let a film crew in, but as Nadine and various other people put it, they let a film crew in, but they wouldn't let partners in. So what was the difference? And if they did say, which they said, oh, we were testing the film crew, why didn't they test the partners? Are they not more important than a film crew? Okay, Yvonne, this is going to go on. And Tanika Daffy, sorry, I called you my own name, Tanika, earlier on. Daffy, thank you both, and best of luck for New Year's Eve and indeed before and after. Back tomorrow, 1:45, Sean O'Gorman produced. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.